What is up, guys? Welcome to the Big V Podcast. You're with Ted West, and we have a very special guest here for episode 6 of the podcast. It is Greg Jeffers, the general manager of Leagues and Competitions. How are you, Greg?
Great, Ted. Thanks for having me, mate.
That's good. That's good. We are finally doing the first podcast in the office in the State Basketball Centre. So all out of 5 episodes has been online. So it's good to do the first one face to face.
Certainly is. It's a fantastic new facility we've got here, Ted, and for our Big V community having popped along. Great to get him here at the State Basketball Centre at the Basketball Victoria offices at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, for the people that do or don't know, we have a lot of exciting things coming up here at the State Basketball Centre, especially in the junior space, but I'm sure people will find out that a little bit later to some extent. But we'll get straight into it with Big V Basketball. We have Youth League Finals have already wrapped up round one in all 6 divisions. Greg, do you want to touch on what's happened thus far?
Yeah, it's an exciting time of year, Ted. Looking through the games from the weekend, the VYC men, and we've got to flag you, Coach Nutter Wadding, and you copped a loss to Kilsyth on the weekend, Ted.
Yes, but I did.
Good to see Kilsyth and Melbourne get themselves through the preliminary finals. They were the grand finalists in 2023, if I remember correctly. So great to see them back and leading the way. This weekend, though, Nutter Wadding will host Sandringham, and Eltham will play Casey for those last 2 spots in the preliminary final competition. So again, you're kind of in that scenario, 6 of the big clubs remaining in VYC, 6 clubs that are synonymous with being at the top of the tree.
Absolutely.
VYC women, Melbourne Tigers, finish top spot, get themselves through to the preliminary final with a win over Altona. Meanwhile, Casey get over the top of Keilor to get through to the second prelim. This week's matchups, Altona and Dandenong face off with the winner to play against Casey. Meanwhile, Bendigo play Keilor. Defending champions Bendigo play Keilor with the winner to face the Melbourne Tigers in the 3rd week. Youth League One men. Now, it's interesting, a double aspect to the Youth League One men's competition and women's, to be honest, is that not only this week we'll be down to the final 6 teams, but the 2 semis this week, the 2 winners of these games will get through to our qualifying rounds, which have been so successful in this 2024 season. McKinnon got through to the prelim with a win over Coburg. Blackburn got through to the prelim with a win over Bulleen. Both of them are now through to the final 4. And with that, alive for finals, but also through to the qualification series. But we've got Coburg taking on Geelong, with the winner getting through to play against Blackburn in that coveted final 4 spot. Meanwhile, Hume City, after defeating Melbourne Uni, will take on Bulleen, with the winner getting through to play against McKinnon again, that 4th spot in the Youth One men's competition. Going across to the Youth League One women. Same scenario, final 4 get that position in the qualification series. McKinnon finishing on top, rolled Albury Wodonga, who came 4th, McKinnon will go through to the prelim final. And Pakenham defeated Ballarat and are getting themselves through to week 3 as well. That does mean we see Albury now taking on this weekend. They'll host Coburg. Coburg getting through week 1, the elimination final against Collingwood. And Geelong United overcame Camberwell in the elimination final, so they'll travel to Ballarat with the winner of that matchup to take on McKinnon. Youth League 2 men. We have the same scenario, top 4 will get themselves to qualification, not just the preliminary finals. So Pakenham, been undefeated all year, outstanding season, 23-0, I think, this first win over Pakenham now, over Westgate. It takes them 23-0 record, always tough. And you just start to get a little nervous, Ted, if I remember as a coach.
Yep.
You get a little nervous at that undefeated record.
We've had that a few times
recently. We have, and I'm sure the worry is they're thinking ahead. I'm sure they've got themselves and the boys well prepared for that prelim final week. But in the meantime, they've got through after defeating Westgate. Westgate will now take on Wallen in this week's semi-final, while Whittlesea overcame Sunbury, and Whittlesea go through to the prelim final. Sunbury will now face Mornington in this week's semi-final as well. Youth League 2 women, final 5 scenario, little different here. Western Port had the weekend off. We now have our final 4 all sorted for this competition. Western Port finished on top. They had the week off. They now take on the Sherbrooke Suns, who defeated Sunbury last weekend. And that does mean that Sunbury will now host Bellarine. Bellarine overcoming Mornington on the weekend. So the youth competition, the aim, certainly introduction to the qualification series, would have a more competitive competition from top to bottom of every one of those ladders. And aside from Pakenham going 23-0 so far, I think that's exactly what we've seen.
Absolutely. So, like you said, with our qualification series, youth lead to women. So they're those final four locked in positions. So Western, Port, Sherbrooke, Sunbury and Bellarine, all four teams now going to be competing in that youth qualification series to try and move up to Youth League One. Whilst the other finals are yet to be decided, we'll find out in those preliminary final games after this weekend to see which of those four teams will be in contention to move up. So it's very, very interesting. I'm excited to see what happens. I'm excited to see Nutter Wadding get on top.
I think this time last year, Ted, you and I were talking a bit about there was a couple of associations who made a big deal about the fact they may have been a long shot getting up and winning the Youth 1 or Youth 2 title, but just to get into that final four, it demonstrated that they were working towards something, and they made a big deal of the fact they made qualification. It gave them a shot at making the higher division the next year, and that's kind of what we wanted, a scenario where the youth divisions, there was something bigger that you were competing for. And we've often seen teams win championships in youth and then have a number of players age out. And this, while you lose that automatic promotion, I think what it does do is allow the right teams to move up and the right teams to come down year to year.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, a prime example of it all was Geelong United's Youth 1 Men last year. I had a good chat with Luke Beard, their head coach, and they sort of set themselves some goals when they heard about this youth qualification series that yes, they wanted to make finals, yes, they wanted to make that grand final series, but obviously that first goal was to reach that youth qualification series, and which they did. Unfortunately, they didn't quite make it through, but I think that's what we're starting to see now. People and teams and associations are having sort of different goals, and they're adjusting a little bit more to what sort of is in the ballpark for them realistically.
I agree with you, and I think what we were trying to do, I'm going to look at Blackburn, my friends at Blackburn Vikings, and they had several years were at the lower end of youth championship and they deserved to be there, but they hadn't been winning as many games. I know the Blackburn Association would love to get. Now they've had a year, they lost in that qualification series, they went to Youth 1, they've had a winning season. Here they are now with a group of guys in a chance to win the title and an opportunity to go back up to youth champ. And, you know, the naysayers will say there's clubs that loaded their teams up to make sure they won youth qualification games. You're absolutely right. There is an element of that, but no matter what we put in place, there's going to be people looking to dodge the rules. Nobody dodged the rules, took advantage of the rules as they are or as they were. And what we have seen, though, is most of those clubs that did that are actually paying the price this season. They're at the lower end of that ladder, and then they're going to be back in the same situation early next year anyway. So
absolutely.
I think it'd be interesting as this format matures and clubs come to realise it does help you move up and down the system easier and more freely, that I think it'll prove to be really beneficial in the Big V competitions.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, enough of youth league. Let's touch on our senior competitions now, as we have Division 1 men and Division 2 men kicking off their first round of finals this weekend. Now, top five is what we have for both our competitions. So like our Youth League 2 women, we have a top five with the first place getting that week off. Now, we'll start with Division 1 men of RMIT.
Now, can I just say, Ted, you have had to listen to me, and our team has had to listen to me talk about the Division 1 and 2 comps this year more so than in the past few years which I've operated. The competitive, I feel like Big V is now at a point we've stabilised a little bit.
Yep.
And the teams that Division 1 competition in particular, when you're having names like Tristan Forsyth, Matt Fennell, Matt Snowball, all going into Division 1 men's competition, we've seen the standard rise. And clubs like RMIT have taken some time to build. I think it's been an outstanding year in the Division 1 men's competition in particular. So tough to make the final five, to be honest, but congratulations to all our teams.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely has been. And, you know, we had some mini ladders that were possible. We had some. We almost had to wait. We did have to wait till the very last round to actually see who was going to finish where.
Yep.
I had conversations with associations during the week of, you may host and you may not host, or you may make finals or you may not make finals. So the fact that we have to wait to the very last week of the regular season to find out who's actually going to play and who's not, I think that does speak volume to what you're saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we've What's really pleasing in that Division One competition? We talked about how it's stabilising. It's RMIT in there for a couple of years now, but we've seen GU are a past winner of Division Two. They're now, I think, in their second year of Division One.
Yep.
There they are in third spot. Altona were promoted last year. They're in their first year of Division One, and here they are in 8 and 10. And I was going to say Whittlesea. Whittlesea was the one that I was lucky enough to travel to Mildura last year and see the Whittlesea team.
Yep.
Seen bits and pieces of them this year, but they were one at the start of the year. We did predict that they were one team that were going to be able to transition to Division One. They're big, they're athletic, they move the ball well, they play an offensive style of game, and that's proven to be the case with a 14-4 record this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, they've added a piece of Meekness Payne, who's been absolutely dominant as well.
Not a bad addition. Yeah,
not a bad addition at all. And we'll get to him in a minute, but we'll touch on RMIT as they got the week off round one, so they'll be sitting at home resting and probably watching these games to see what unfolds. But I mean, you can't, if you're talking RMIT, you have to immediately talk about Steve Coffey. Now, this guy has led his team again this season in points, rebounds, and assists. And during this time, he's had an ankle injury, so he didn't even play all 18 games.
And he missed a couple of games in the middle of the season, didn't he?
Yep.
There was some other stuff going on that led to him missing a couple of games. So he's also played a hand in coaching.
Youth League two-man head coach as well. So he's played 14 games, suited up as a starter in 13 of those. So he's missed four games, and yet he's still put up those numbers.
He's a special man and had a second child, I think, during the season too.
Yes, he did.
Steve.
Absolutely. So, yes, he did.
Look, I'm not shy from the fact I think what RMIT have built over the last few years of being in Big V competition is something very, very good. I know many of our teams don't like heading to the, I'm going to call it the brick box.
The brick box.
Out there. I'm sure there's a better name for it, but I know the RMIT crew love the noise that gets generated in that venue. Others of us that are, you know, maybe a little older, it's a little loud, not to our liking, but it is a passion. It's a noisy location, and I know teams hate going there to play against them. Of course, they'll be moving their finals this year, and as they did last year, into bigger venues to accommodate the crowds that do come with this level. But no, RMIT, an outstanding season, and congratulations on the 16-2 top of the ladder.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the two losses did come to two teams in this finals.
They did.
So they lost to Whittlesea by 5 in round 9, and then they got blown out by Altona by 30 points in round 6. Now, I will say that round 6 game, Coffey didn't play. Now, you could almost beat the question, is Coffey worth 30 points? Some would actually say yes.
Yeah, you would. What it does demonstrate is the concern that if Coffey's not around, how much trouble they could be in. I don't care how 30 points, that's a massive blowout.
It is.
That rings some alarm bells for me.
Absolutely. But, I mean, they've brought in Zach Kolmenbach this year, who was a Nutterwadding previously, and you know, he's had his fair share of big events in his recent history. He's came up against, you know, Ovi McBeggar back in the Nutterwadding Eltham day. So he's had some big clashes. So it's not like he's...
I like Zach Kolmenbach, but from a personal perspective, I just got a shudder of my spine hearing that name out of pure respect for what Kolmenbach used to do in youth championship divisions. But no, I was really pleasantly surprised by the impact he made on the competition this season. I haven't seen him for a couple of years on the court, but I thought, no, he complemented that group really well. Great screener, great rebounder, and generates exactly what Steve and the boys need in that group.
He's
made a significant impact.
Yeah, for sure. I think he definitely built some stability next to Lees. But we'll move on from RMIT because we'll get into the first game. So Whittlesea hosting Gippsland in their first game. Now, we got some stats here. We've got Meekness Payne, who's averaged 27 points per game, 10 rebounds per game. And this guy, he's not a small guy. Like, he's a big guy. I'm going to say he's about 6'6", but he plays on the perimeter.
Oof.
39% from three, 72% from the line. So
he can hoop.
Like, he's...
At this level, he's a walking double-double, and shooting the ball at nearly 40% at the perimeter makes you deadly.
Now, I wonder if he's one of these guys that, as it's happened in the past with imports have come into this league for the first year, and other teams have seen them play 1 year and then they move up. So we've seen that with Adam Anderson, who was at Altona last year, now a McKinnon Enchantman.
Yep.
Is Meekness, is he a guy who we might see move up into championship next year?
Yes, with the Pacers. Whittlesey could just go through and win this title and get themselves promotion. So
that's very true.
Whittlesey Pacers, the Pacer pack would say yes.
He will
be moving up a division. Absolutely. And doing so out at Mill Park.
Well, paired with Patrick Green, who's been around for
legend
neons,
of our competition.
For
Patrick
neons.
Green.
Still shooting 44% from the three-point line, 16 points per game, 4 assists. Like, his middle ball screen actions are something that they're trademark of how he just creates and how he finds his position and gets to his spot. And with Meekness coming off the perimeter and being that aggressive guy who can stretch the floor and get on the rim and obviously make his free throws, he's the kind of guy who only shoots one when he goes to the line. He doesn't shoot two. He shoots one. So that is a serious combination that the Gippsland are going to have to, you know, really figure out, because they played twice throughout the year and Whittlesey got him twice.
I think, yeah. The outstanding, having chatted about this with you during the year, there's been the RMIT and Whittlesey, and it feels like they've been a step above.
Yeah.
And GU, Gippsland United, at their best have been there, but when they've had the opportunity to go head-to-head against these teams, they haven't quite been in step. The Whittlesey side, just that, they just seem to be that starting five strong enough and a level above most of the Division One competition.
Mm. Yeah, 100%. But, I mean, we can't rule out Gippsland. I mean, Jalen Wimbley's been incredible as the import coming in. Ben Barlow's been amazing, who moved back home. I believe he's a Traralgon Junior, a T-Berg Junior.
Yes,
so
spent some time at... T-Birds.
So it is good to see him come back, and he's been impactful all the same. So I'll be very interested to see. Now, Dirk's matched up on Jalen Wimbley both times in both outings, Jason Dirks.
It's another legend of our competition.
It is another
Jason
legend.
Dirks.
It is another legend.
I remember
legend,
some 30, 40-point games back in D2 days several years ago.
And I'm pretty sure he had a massive milestone out of this year as well. I think he clocked that 300, I want to say. Wow. So congratulations to him. So expect those two to match up. And then down the other end, I believe Wimbley matched up on Payne, which is an interesting lineup for me, because I thought Meekness is significantly more physical than Jalen. So it's interesting to see how those two matchups will go.
It's a different, they're different side of athletes, aren't they? About Payne, he's an effort guy, and Wimbley's he is a bit more of that athlete. They certainly, you know, the battle between the two of them is certainly going to go a long way to deciding the game. But one thing that impressed me, Whittlesey, when I've seen them, is the speed in which they play out. That was I even just touched on it before, and they've carried forward. That was the bit that I had the question mark on. The speed they played with in 2023 in Division 2 worked, no questions.
Yeah.
How was it going to translate into 2024 at that higher level? And it has certainly worked for them, Whittlesey. That height, length, the fast speed, they've certainly gone a long way to outrunning teams throughout the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, two other teams who sort of made serious pushes here is Bulleen and Altona. So Altona will be going east on Caster and having to host a surging Bulleen at the moment, a surging Bulleen.
Well, there was a lot of discussion around the Boomers at the start of the year.
About who was on their roster?
About who was on the roster.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a few of them that are actually ex-Bulleen juniors, right? So it's not all imports. You know, I'm a passionate association guy and people play. But when you add Fennell, Snowball, Clark, all with such recent experience in NBL 1.
Andrew Nola.
Not just that, but they dominated Big V Champ.
Yeah.
Like, let's not take away from the Ringwood period prior to NBL 1. Ringwood, up there with one or two, the Knoxes, the Elthams, they dominated.
For years.
Yep. And they were the cornerstones of that.
Yeah.
And the shockwaves it sent through the Division One competition to see those guys roll into that Bulleen team, who had the makings, they had some pieces in there already. Evan Solakidis is one that's been around with Bulleen for several years now, captain of the group, I believe. That was always going to be, while it was a little bit of the, you know, it's the older boys, we don't want to be too disrespectful of them, but they got some veterans in the group. But I, they're my dark horse here, Ted.
Well, I don't
get,
blame you.
They've got to get past Altona, who are tough in their own right. But that experience of Bulleen is going to be tough come playoff time because these boys have done it many, many times before.
100%. And look, they do kind of play a different brand of basketball to the rest of these teams. Because I think they choose to play a little bit more in the half court. They like to play out of the post with Fennell and Clark. They got Nola, who is a bit more of a floor general, who can still shoot the ball. And then you got Snow, who's come off the bench in most of his games.
Yep.
So another guy with just sheer experience, who's just going to be able to control the pace of the game and tell Altona that you're not playing your way, we're going to play our way, and you can't do anything about it.
No, I'm with you. And look, what certainly hurt Bulleen was when losing Shields midway through the season. I think he had some family issues,
yeah.
Back home. So
losing,
I mean, they lost him. They brought in Sean Clark. But I think that was that certainly was a significant hit on the group. So they've done well to finish off the year they have. But, yeah, they've got some athleticism in the group. They've got some guys who can shoot the ball, but they've got that experience. They've got big-bodied experience. And when it comes... they get a little coverage around the perimeter against some of these teams as the playoffs go. If they can get through round one, if they've got some coverage around the perimeter, I think they're definitely going to have the bodies inside to dominate when they need to.
Yeah, absolutely. And then when you look at Altona, they've got some guys who can play out on the perimeter. You've got Matt Roseby, who's been in Big V for a number of years. He was went through Hawthorn, but I believe, and you got Samson Rocker there as well. So two of their bigger bodies who are guys who are stretching the floor the most as their higher three-point shooters. And then you got Nick Patel, who's just been just an absolute floor general for Altona.
I want to mention Thomas Georgiades as well. I remember him from a few years ago, and he was dominating scoring for Altona. He's another one who's been around for several years in the Big V competition. And then the likes of Nick Formosa in there as well. They've got a lot of talent on this lineup.
Yeah, they do.
Altona. Yep. And I don't think the 8-10 record probably truly reflects where they're at. Interesting to note the two times they have played each other. Round 14, Altona got over the top of Bulleen by 3. Bulleen without Fennell, which is a substantial impact.
It is.
And Bulleen was able to bounce back 4 rounds later and to roll Altona 95-84. So this is very much a flip of the coin. I think... for me, I'm leaning towards Bulleen purely through that experience at the higher levels and being able to get it done in the big games.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's our Division 1. So just the two games with RMIT having the week off. Now, Division 2 men, we have the exact same scenario here. We have a top 5 with a 2-3 with a second chance, 4-5 knockout with Craigie Byrne as a group finishing on top. Now, Craigie Byrne have had... I want to say they've had an interesting year, but they do deserve to be on top because, you know, they've done it by committee, this team. They're 15-3 for their record. They've finished strong with 4 wins in a row. They dropped one a few weeks ago, but, you know, they've forced their way into this top position. And to be honest, they've truly deserved it.
Well, anyone with a 15-3 record, they've set themselves apart. I do always look at this competition and think, geez, there's a fair bit of travel in here, Ted. That's my first thought. That's always something you're going to have to face in this competition, and we're going to see that with Southern Penn, Surf Coast and Mildura all a part of it. There's certainly going to be plenty of travel getting through this final series. But no, Craigie Byrne, there have been some names in there. Max Vital has been around for several years. I think of him as Wallen initially from memory, but Diamond Valley for many years at junior level, moving into seniors before going back to Wallen, now back at... playing for Craigie Byrne. Mark Berezdecki has been around for a long time. I always think of him as around in the youth levels and seniors at Hume City. But 15-10 that he's gone this year with Craigie Byrne, found a nice home there and playing a big role. So Craigie Byrne, again, you've got a couple of similar situation to what we were just talking about. A couple of veterans that are, I'm not sure I feel comfortable calling Max Vitala a veteran, but I'm going to go with it.
He's close enough.
Yeah, well, let's
I think he's close enough.
You get to a point, Ted, you think of all these guys as being 15, 16 years of age, like when we saw them on Friday nights.
Yeah.
But I'll go with veteran. But 17 points a game, 44% from the perimeter. You know, he's definitely been a leader for their team at Craigie Byrne this year.
Absolutely. Now, their first game, so Mildura taking on Surf Coast. So Surf Coast have to make the trip up to Mildura round one, which is
tough.
Tough. The game hasn't even started yet, and that's already tiring in itself. So it's always interesting to see how any team goes up in Mildura, because they have such an incredible home court advantage there of just the way that place runs and and the atmosphere that they generate and the home crowd that they're able to bring down every Saturday, Sunday game. It's amazing. I haven't been there myself. I know you've been there. How have you sort of, you know, compared it to some other places you've been?
They've got a fantastic new facility, Ted. Let me declare that. We had our junior country championships there this year, and I had the pleasure of going up for that. But there are plenty of people who'll be able to relate to this. There's something about the older venues. And, you know, we won't talk about, there's nuances to your home court. And the Hot House has that. And they've got their corporate boxes up the top, which sell out. Local business gets behind the Heat. They've got the radio, the media box up in the corner, so the local radio commentating the game. They've got their social areas on the baseline up top. Like, it's, and the atmosphere that gets generated from the local basketball community come out and play. Anyone in Big V that has been to Mildura will tell you it's one of their favourite places to play.
Mm. Well, it's so condensed.
It's,
you've said all of that, and that's all so condensed,
Yeah. One of the things when I went up there last year, I haven't been lucky enough to attend it until I went last year as part of my job, and getting to sit there and listening to the passion, and it was kind of funny. I needed a haircut in Mildura, Ted, and the local barber, who had this fine-looking mo, mind you, he's, no, sorry, sir, we're shutting up. And I said, all right, no stress, no problem. And wandered down, found myself another one, got done, came back that night. The barber was on the team. And of course, he'd had to shut
up. It's Sammy.
He had to shut up the barber shop because he had to play. And I gone, fair enough. Now, you don't see this when you come in and play in, at McKinnon. You don't see the local barbers rolled out to play. There are just certain things that you go. It's a special place when you get to go to Mildura or any town and play. It is a special environment, and something about those older venues that some of the newer ones don't quite have to the same extent. So Surf Coast, I'm sure it'll be better if they win, but they'll have a great night up there at Mildura this Saturday night.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, people always seem to have a good night up in Mildura regardless. But, you know, Jason Reardon's going to have to be one of those guys who's going up, and he's got another one of those just extensive experiences in Big V and in this league. And
talking about just... Well, this is just like a legends show. How many legends of Big V can we name drop?
We've got some more.
Well, Jason Reardon won a couple of championships.
Yeah.
Most notably, probably most recently with Corio Bay, as they were before becoming Geelong United. I don't want to go into too much about individuals, but great to see Jason Reardon still playing. Great that he is a part of the Surf Coast Association and building what is a thriving association down there at Torquay and surrounds.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've got four teams in Big V now, which they've continued to build since they started. So they've got the two youth league teams who are flourishing in their own right. So it is awesome to see them as well. Dexter Graham is also a new addition to Surf Coast Chargers, who's been in this league for a number of years, was Camwell most recently in championship.
Yeah, spent some time Melton, I think, as well.
Yep.
There's a couple of clubs that Dexter's been involved in.
Yep. So they have a bit of an untraditional offense. I've seen some of their games that they played, and you know, they've run some gate screens, which we sort of see every now and then off like an ATO or something like that. And they've got some other actions where they've got a ball screen and a back screen going on at the same time. So they've got some different offenses that you would normally see in Division Two, man, which I almost think sets them aside, because if you got Jason Reardon at the top with the ball coming off a ball screen, he's got that many options that he's going to find one, and he's done it year in, year out.
You reckon Jason's had a fair bit to do, a bit of a chat with the coach regarding the offensive system?
I wouldn't be surprised, considering he's averaging 17 points, 5 assists, and 9 rebounds.
Yeah, look, it's. They've structured things well, it would appear, in terms to suit the offensive style complements the makeup of their team,
yep,
and has them in the position they're in right now, doesn't it? It's worked well for them. Just in terms of their matchups, they did roll Mildura early in the year.
They did.
At home. But that trip to Mildura losing by 7 in round 13, I mean, it's some weeks ago now. You know how teams, we all know that teams evolve and adjust as that over that period. So, no, I think Surf Coast will certainly travel there with some level of confidence. They can make an impact up at the Hothouse.
Well, I mean, that's what we're talking about, isn't it? I mean, you know, like you said, Surf Coast rolled him in round 6 at Surf Coast, but then you go to Mildura and it's a completely different ball game, regardless of if they had different lineups. Yep. Like the situation is completely different. So very, very eager to see what happens there, as that's a second chance opportunity for both teams. Now, the other game is over at Sherbrooke, over at Upway, and they're hosting Southern Penn.
Can I just say, I've been to Upway and yep, had a look at their new, well, it's a couple of years old now, the Upway Stadium, but
it is.
Having been there in the days of Monbulk Stadium,
mm-hmm,
and Belgravia Heights, what a wonderful venue Upway is.
Beautiful place.
A beautiful place. The Suns have got themselves a terrific venue out there, and their teams have done extremely well this year, so especially in those the senior side. So, sorry, I just want to get that little shout-out. Always good to get a shout-out when our new venues complement our competition. So well done to Sherbrooke and the Upway Secondary College getting that done. Sherbrooke on the back of Malik Potter, 26 points per game, 5 rebounds, but again, just nudging that 40% from the 3-point line. He's mm-hmm. been important for the Suns this year.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think Mam Ayul has been, you know, prolific for these guys as well. He came in a little bit later in the season. He's played just the 10 games, so he's come in about halfway through, but. Like, this guy is something to be seen, to be honest, in Division 2, man. He's huge. He's like 6'8", 6'9". He's lanky. He can stretch the floor. He can put the ball on the floor. He can play in the post. I've done my research and I watched one of these games and Southern Penn doubled him in the post and he's still scoring. He had 29 points in their last hit out. 3 from 4 from the 3-point line. So I think as much as Malik Potter is... firstly, an MVP contention guy and probably their go-to guy, I think Mam Ayul is going to be a difference maker for the Sherbrooke Suns this coming weekend.
So it's interesting. I'm just probably more so than any other game, Ted. I'm having a look at this, and thanks to hoopsdb.net and Duncan yep. Berg for his work, because he gets, if you haven't checked it out, this gets us, for all our stats and breakdowns information, this place is a godsend. Sherbrooke average 88.3 points per game. Southern Penn are just at 80. Now, it doesn't seem substantial, but over the course of a season, that to get to that point, there is a significant difference. Now, while Sherbrooke average 88.3, important to note, they give up 85.9. And Southern Penn, though, this is the point of difference for me. They're able to clamp down better. Them and Mildura are the two outstanding teams defensively, clamping yep. down at 78 points a game. And what it says to me, you're right, Sherbrooke have got individual talent to do the damage, but Southern Penn have been able to put in defensive strategies throughout the year that have been able to make an impact. And I'll just be interested to note, typically when that points against is so good, it usually means coaches and senior players have got together and are flexible with their strategies and able to adjust to the opposition. And given you've already talked about, they've looked to make those changes. It'd be interesting to see whether they look to do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got Elliot Hunt, who's probably going to be the guy to match up on Mam, and Bryce Knox is probably going to be the one to match up on Malik Potter. So, yeah, they've got those guys who can contain, and then they've also got all these other key pieces to be able to help out where they need. So, I'm excited for this matchup. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens and who's going to be, you know, the guy on the team to shut down all these players, because... you know, Bryce is that kind of guy who can go coast to coast and play through the middle of the floor, and he's almost unstoppable when he's getting downhill. He can play off that middle pick and roll, and he finds his mid-game very, very well. He elevates, and he's incredibly tough to contest when he's rolling. So I think it'll be interesting to see. I think if Corey Bond is found playing inside the three-point line, it could be a different game. I think if Bryce Knox can be sort of taken away from... from his downhill actions and getting to play a little bit more disrupted, I think Sherbrooke have the upper hand there. But like you said, if Southern Penn can convert defense to offense and do it quickly, I think Sherbrooke might be in some trouble.
It promised to be a big weekend, Ted, and it's heartbreaking. It's so exciting we're at this stage of the season, heartbreaking at the same time that we're looking here and going, this will see some seasons end. And, you know, to probably we didn't touch on enough is the fact Surf Coast and Sherbrooke, third and fourth, it was head-to-head that separated the two of them, both with an 11-7 record.
It was.
And Southern Penn are in playoffs purely on the basis of a three-way tie.
Yep.
So Southern Penn, Melton, Collingwood all finished 9-9. And the mini ladder gets Southern Penn across the line and into that fifth spot and into a playoff berth. And suddenly we're sitting here as to how's Southern Penn, that with a couple of buckets the other way, they could have been sitting seventh, to be honest. Yet here they are, fifth, and having a crack at Sherbrooke and a playoff run.
I mean, it's the beauty of basketball, isn't it, though? I mean, all these mini ladders are head-to-head games. Like, some people think during the season it doesn't matter, but you come to the end of the season, it does.
You know what I've always hated is when we stop playing at the end of the game. I hate it, and I know different people, I'm in the minority. When it comes to the mini ladder time and you needed an extra bucket back in round three, you'll have wished that you continued to play the game.
Absolutely.
And we're starting to see it happen more and more.
Yeah.
We saw it in the NBL. Was it the 23, end of the 23 season,
I think? It was.
So maybe we've got to change the attitude and we've got to play the games out, Ted, and maximise your victory.
There you go. You heard it here first.
There you go.
You heard it here first. Now, that'll be all for us on our Big V podcast. You got Division 1 men and Division 2 men beginning their first round of finals this coming weekend. Stay tuned. If you want to find out more, jump on our website on bigv.com.au or our socials, Big V_ball. We'll catch you later.
See you later.